Hello, and welcome to Grapes and Grain Podcast. I'm Teenie.
And I'm Laura. And we have Robert Licorice in studio with us today. So, Robert, do you want to walk us through the different, you brought us five whiskeys today,
yes. Correct?
Yeah, do we need more glasses? Or,
I've got some.
I'm going to do start with these beauties, and
I'm excited about this cornbread, too. Look at how beautiful the color is.
Oh, my God, yeah, okay, so... we do have to acknowledge that Robert not only so graciously gave us his time, graciously drove to our studio and brought all of these amazing whiskeys for us to try, but he also hand-baked cornbread for us to try out of the grain profile from their whiskey, and I'm just so blown away.
We are some spoiled-ass bitches.
I am, my heart is like the end of the Grinch movie.
And the thunder rolls.
Yeah, and the thunder rolls. And lightning strikes.
Can't afford it.
Yeah. So we'll stop that one right there. There's going to be a little bit of water.
Oh, my God.
All right.
I officially can't.
You're officially not allowed.
I'm officially unintroduced.
This is why people are using cough syrup instead of cognac.
Yep. All right. So okay. This one is the Iron Root Esoteric American Whiskey.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is like we're in church.
It is. Little communions.
So this year's batch is going to be 100% corn. It's all different varietals of corn. You can ask me the exact mash bill, but to be honest with you, it's a blend of 25 different barrels, and they all had varying amounts of the different corns in it, so I'd have to do a lot of math.
Yeah,
and math is hard.
Math is very hard. But again, 95% of the corn was grown within 60 miles, but it's going to be one of the sweeter profiles we do, but it kind of ends with a little bit of spice kick on the very, very finish. But,
all right.
Oh, God, that's so smoothly
Amen.
Drinkable.
It is.
Amen. And the spirit with you.
Now, how important is aroma in whiskey tasting? Because a lot of the times I just get, like, alcohol on the nose.
It's really important. It's a lot of people, especially with scotches and stuff, they can sit there with it. I've seen people sit there with it for, like, 30 minutes and just sit there and smell.
Really?
Now, it's one of those things that's just like with wine tasting and nosing and stuff. It's one of those things that it's a learned thing.
Because
a lot of it, if you nose in too deep, especially when you have open glasses like this, your trigeminal nerve will just get hit and it'll basically lock something out. You get only alcohol.
Mm.
But generally, again, the easiest things kind of pick out in whiskey, you're going to be some of the bigger, like caramel and vanilla you're going to see.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, almost every whiskey will have a little bit of caramel and vanilla to it. And that's just because oak's got vanillin in it, and that's what you're extracting out into the whiskey or wines for that matter. So this is kind of the sweeter light guy of the group. In the spring we'll have a 90 proof version of Harbinger that comes out that will be the lowest that we do.
Awesome.
Okay.
Why did you choose Harbinger specifically? Just because it's the highest or because it's original?
Harbinger, that's because it's one of our favorite profiles. Mm-hmm. Distillery kind of my brother's favorite really jumps on Promethean. Again, even the next batch, Promethean, I'm really excited about because every batch we release, the whiskey's getting much older.
Mm-hmm.
So, like this one, the Promethean, the first batch was 16 months old. The latest batch that'll come out here probably midsummer will be over 2 years old. So, it's again slowly moving up as we get older as a distillery. We're able to release older and older whiskeys.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Well, where should we go from it?
I'm not in charge of pouring this.
We're going to go. Promethean's the next one that I would do.
Okay.
If we're just going
to
do.
Yeah. Would you like to pour?
I got it already.
Oh, perfect. You have one.
We'll just go proof wise. We'll just go up the ladder.
Perfect.
Proof.
Perfect. So while I'm pouring this, can you tell us a little bit? And I struggle with this in wine tasting as well. When you're sipping it, how can you differentiate the difference between spiciness and just like the hotness from alcohol?
One is going to be just the more that you drink whiskey at higher proof, the more that your body will get accustomed to it. The way that I do it right off the bat, though, generally, especially if it's going to be higher proof whiskeys, I'll take a little sip, hold it in my mouth, and then go ahead and swallow it, not worry about really analyzing at that point. It's just to kind of prepare my body. It also will make you salivate a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So when you take that next sip and you hold it in your mouth, it actually, your saliva will dilute it a little bit, and you're going to be able to taste the whiskey a lot better.
It's not like shocking your palate.
Exactly. You're not going to be quite as shocked as you would be otherwise.
Oh, yeah. That's okay.
And then until you get to that point, you can also always add a little bit of water. Water to it.
Yeah, I like our little water dropper right here. This is fun.
Yeah, I know. I guess in the sake of being green, we should rinse the next one.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Cool. So, well, tell us about what we have here.
So Promethean is going to be, again, our little bit spicier blend. It's got a little bit of rye in it, about 5% rye, so it's a low rye. Now, this is the first of the whiskeys we'll taste that's actually aged. Most of the barrels actually are European oak, which makes us a little bit different. Most American distilleries are all American oak. We use quite a bit of European oak. Generally, we just fell in love with it with those different heirloom corn varietals. This one's got a little bit of purple corn. It's got a bloody butcher corn in it. And then that flint corn is going to be that little bit of kind of spice punch that this guy's got.
I know. I love these descriptors. I like almost the whiskey descriptors more than the wine descriptors.
And the beer descriptors.
I get graphite and jasmine. It's like... punches Tribune.
Don't worry, there's plenty of people that get to that level. You know, they start talking about, you know, this reminds me of my grandmother's tea that I had, and you're like, I had never had your grandmother's tea, so this isn't gonna be very helpful for me. Not saying you're wrong, but and again, taste is such a personal thing to me that I try to be a little bit more broad with when I do tasting descriptors, because you can get really nuanced and really, really down into it. But most people, when you start doing that, just kind of glaze eyes over and just.
Yeah. It's one of the big things in beer judging, too, being you can't use any word under the sun because in the beer judging certification, the words mean specific things. Mm-hmm. So even when it comes to color, I described a beer once as rust colored, which it was, but that's not one of the vocabulary
official
words.
Terms,
yeah. So
pre-approved.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, it doesn't fall on the actual scale. Cause I was like, all right, well,
that's so funny.
Like, this reminds me of my uncle's leather shoe. It's like, you can't really write that on a beer judging.
So we just do a few drops of water?
Yeah, just do a few drops of water. To me,
this
whiskey really, it does really well with it.
Whiskey here.
No, you're fine.
Here.
Finished mine already. Yeah.
I know. So it's so funny you say that, actually, because I went to Ireland for my 30th birthday and drank so many whiskeys while we were out there. And... it was just the best.
So many good ones. Oh.
So many good ones. And just fell in love with some amazing. There was actually a Foxy John's in Dingle Peninsula where we went and with a bunch of the local people there and bus drivers from the Rick Steves company. And we went on a whiskey rampage there and it was amazing. But one of the tour guides there actually showed me about putting a couple drops of water in like halfway through and just you get like a completely separate glass of drink.
I noticed it immediately on the nose of this one. Maybe it's because I'm drinking out of a giant snifter. But it really lightened the nose. I got a lot of like really caramely notes the first time and now it feels a little bit more mild, a little bit more
it does.
Vanilla.
Yeah,
like
you need a lot more vanilla coming out of it. Wow. Now, this next one that's coming is... Of all of these, this guy's a completely different beast. So this one's going to be, if my memory serves me, it's basically 107 proof. So we're stepping up a little bit more.
Are we going in proof order?
Yeah, we're going in proof. So we went 97, 103, and then we're 107.
Slow and steady.
So this guy was we actually originally made this because we were going to do a barrel-aged gin. And so this has been aging for a number of years. And then we had... A bunch of guys from the North Texas Spirit Society came up, and like Fred Minnick, he was a big whiskey writer for Whiskey Advocate and stuff, came in, and we were just tasting them in random barrels in the warehouse and tasted them on it. They all fell in love with this particular barrel.
Oh, wow.
And so the North Texas Spirit Society bought this as their personal single barrel that they took out this year. So.
Yeah. So, Starka.
Starka. So, Starka actually is in the actual term Starka refers to in Poland, again, as the history goes that I understand it, and obviously I've never met an actual Starka producer because there haven't really been a whole lot in the last, 30
century?
Years.
Yeah.
But essentially, yeah. So, after World War II and stuff like that, it was pretty much killed off for the most part, to my understanding. But so the story behind it goes that the producers, like the vodka producers and stuff in Poland, whenever there would have a child would be born, they'd fill a barrel up with their vodka. They might put some apple leaves in it, or they might add a little bit of cognac to the barrel as well. They'd plug it and they'd bury it. And when their kid got married, they dig up the barrel, and that's what they drink at the wedding.
I love that tradition. Can we bring that back?
Yeah, please. We should do that.
So it's a much higher distilled spirit, because, again, typically whiskey rules, not anything over 160 is no longer whiskey. But you do have in the U.S. a little category called light whiskey, which is distilled over 160, which is what this guy is.
Okay.
Very cool. Now, are you and your family Polish? Is
that no, we're actually Croatian.
Croatian. That's what it was. I remember because I met your mom out at the tasting room, correct? And yeah, you come and visit these wonderful people at their tasting room. It's a family affair.
Mom is always there.
Yeah, your mom was awesome. She was a real cool lady, but she was telling me about your lineage of touch.
So.
Oh. Wow, that smells so good.
Oh, wow. This is really different.
It's like marshmallowy smell.
I get a lot of like floral notes in this.
Oh, yeah, on the end.
Dryness and then a little bit of banana or some sort of.
Oh, the banana,
like,
that's what it is. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
that's
totally
what that is.
Like a Hefeweizen.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the wheat coming through.
What?
In the back of your tongue at the end.
Yeah, I love it. Dance party.
Yeah. He's listening to something else over there.
Yeah.
You got Avicii in the headphones or what?
No, yeah.
R.I.P.
Gosh, this is really great. I was a little nervous when you threw out those numbers, but this is really good.
Yeah. It's super. Wow. What are the words that I'm looking for?
Like creme brulee, like dessert, rich. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Those are all the words that I'm thinking you think of. Velvety.
We actually roast the wheat before we put it in for this batch. So
nice. I love roasting ingredients before using. Yeah. We had a lotes last week. It was all roasted before I made it. It's good.
Amazing. And that's, again, for we make a vodka. It's a quote-unquote Eastern European style vodka. And it's the same mash bill as this, but it's the vodka itself has some of these flavor notes to it,
really?
Which some people freaks them out when they taste vodka.
Yeah, that's
flavor
right.
To it.
I remember your vodka was... something else.
I
different.
Love this.
Very different.
Yeah. We ought to go up there on the weekend and so you can try the gin and vodka. Because every once in a while there's a whiskey, there's the Dingle Whiskey Distillery, their gin is like
Dingle
next
does
level.
Fantastic gin.
Unlike any other vodka.
It's not going to be any other vodka you've ever tasted.
Yes.
I'll tell you that.
You know what it kind of reminded me of is a Polish vodka called Zabruska, which is like a bison grass boss. Which is,
exactly.
It's around in that same region, but that's totally reminded me of that, which is my favorite vodka.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, so what do we have coming next?
Next one, this is the whiskey we're probably most famous for. This actually is the perfect one to actually eat the cornbread.
I'm ahead.
You're ahead on this. So,
you know, this wine lover is like, how do I pair this with food?
So this,
and especially because corn.
Yeah.
So this is our corn whiskey. It's cask strength, again, aged exclusively in European oak. But this guy is our one that's won all the really big awards. It won Best Corn Whiskey, Double Gold San Francisco, World Whiskey Awards, Best Corn Whiskey in the World, out of London, at a whiskey magazine, Best Corn Whiskey in the World.
Wow.
This is our big, really famous whiskey. So when we released this one this year, we actually had people like drive in from Tulsa and St. Louis and all sorts of places that kind of freaked me out that they were driving in, standing in line to buy
no
a bottle.
Yeah, no pressure. It better be great.
Yeah.
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 Cross country to get this. Thank you very much.
So this guy is going to be the first of the cast strengths. So this is 117.8, I believe. This guy, the mash bill is that purple corn and the yellow corn. And so this actually, you can actually taste the difference between the two.
And the purple corn, is that what we're eating in this cornbread over here?
Yeah, so that cornbread's going to have purple corn, the other one's got the yellow corn.
Excellent. So. Well, let me do this so I can get a picture.
Are you spilling again? You know, in the like last precious, episode precious on the champagne episode,
it was just so warm one in your studio big. that it was so foamy every time I poured it.
It was going to be my fault. Let me just say that.
I love super dry white and champagnes, Rieslings, super dry Rieslings, love.
Andrew Snyder asked me, you know, what percentage of reds to whites do you drink? And I said,
said something.
Andrew Snyder asked me what percentage of red and whites I drink, and I told him I drink 90% bubbles and 10% whiskey. That's how I drink.
That's fair.
I would love to be a whiskey drinker every day, but I have responsibilities.
Every day, some of us have to do things, I guess, every once in a while. Speaking of Andrew Snyder, I'm really excited for the distillery that's going to be open up at the school.
Yes, me too.
So they're going to be doing brandy distillation teaching at the school, and we're going to be doing some work with them on that, which is going
to
be a lot of fun.
I need to write about
that. I'm super pumped about that, too. And I'm going to be part of that program. I'm going to be one of the inaugural students. I already told him. I actually asked him to come and talk about Brandy, but he's in Mexico with his family right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He travels more than any person I ever met.
I know it. I aspire to his traveling.
All right.
So this is
way more mild on the nose.
Yeah, it is. That's still so pleasant, though.
Oh, yeah, that's hot.
Cool it down with some of that cornbread. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that is hot.
I'm going to give it a little water drop.
Oh, yeah.
Can you hear
the water
that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, can I get a drop?
I don't know if you can hear that.
It's not acid.
Can you hear this? It's like eyelashes drop, fluttering.
A little butterfly.
Oh, my God, this cornbread's so good.
No, I thought you ran one.
Did you, it's
great.
Grind it yourself?
Yeah, this is actually corn from the distillery, ground. Yeah, my poor mother ground it, so.
Yeah.
She hand grinds all the corn you guys use?
No, not
all. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's like this very South American. She chews everything. Yeah. Yeah.
I was just wondering.
A little
wondering.
Bit of my mom's in every bottle. Yeah. No, we actually, so we do grind a small amount of grain on site. Mm. Most of our major grain uses, though, one of the guys that was a groomsman at my brother's wedding happens to own the mill in Munster, Texas. Mm. Mm-hmm. And so we actually have our farmers send grain to them. They grind it there and then they'll bring it to us twice a week.
Oh, excellent.
So
Munster is right by you guys.
Yeah,
too,
it's really close. Mm-hmm. So we get them to bring us sausages and cheese and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Hopefully all the people listening to this podcast are getting a little geography lesson.
Yeah. About North Texas. Yeah.
That's right, North Texas.
So when you talk about moving the actual ingredient and fruit of wine, like you're talking about, you have to pick it at midnight sometimes just to like make sure it's keeps. Do you find that with corn at all, where you have to be very conscientious of where you're transporting and handling?
I will. So especially when you're drying the corn, that's really important because it can get infected and you can get mold and you can get some of the same issues you have with grapes. It's not quite as big of an issue. Again, most of the farmers are pretty well versed on how to deal with the corns. Now, some of these heirloom corns are very different. The green Oaxacan corn that we use has to be hand harvested. There's not a harvester made for it. So that corn, unfortunately, is really expensive to do.
Yeah.
But it's a really cool. It grows like on hillsides. It doesn't grow in like a normal field.
Really? So you don't get it from North Texas then?
So that one is not. That's why I said it's about that 5% that we do.
Yep.
That's one of the ones that we do because it just can't grow in this climate.
Oh, for sure. And I'm sure especially if it's not growing in this climate, that you guys are probably unique in using that kind of corn.
Well, I've heard of a couple distilleries using it. There's one in Mexico that's really starting to use some of the heirloom corns, which is really fun to see.
Yeah.
And then there's one or two, sporadic craft distilleries that are also using different heirloom corns.
Trying to be as hip and on trend as possible.
Oh, yeah. There's actually some really good friend of ours up at the French Lick Distillery in Indiana. He is one of the best like corn people I've ever met. Like he is a corn breeder.
Whoa.
And so,
like,
yeah, exactly. And so he's been working on different varietals. And so we get to talk with him and talk about kind of what we're doing, what we see from different varietals. Same thing with him. And he actually sent us some of his own personal corns called the Amanda Palmer corn. And so he's been developing that corn for years. And we actually just laid some down not too long ago that we grew. And again, sometimes when we're testing out a new corn, again, it might be growing in my mom or dad's backyard. We had just an entire yard is corn stalks. And it was really funny because we've got a lot of like antique equipment up at the distillery. Some of it's like a corn shuckers where they actually will pull the kernels off the cob. The first year, my dad and my mom didn't realize that we had this, and they just decided they weren't going to tell us anything that they had harvested the corn already. And they actually would watch their TV shows at night, and they'd pluck the kernels off one
You're
at a time
kidding.
With their thumbs.
Oh my.
So the first batch of the Bloody Butcher corn that we got was hand shucked.
That is so funny.
Your parents love you.
They do. You should be
required to put that on the bottle label as
much.
Well.
Yeah,
like, distilled in Texas.
Hand shucked.
That's amazing. Dedication.
When you say handmade, there's
literally.
A level of literally handmade
yeah,
on that one.
Truly.
Handcrafted.
Mm-hmm. That is so funny.
That is funny.
This is good. All right. So we have one more here.
We have one more. This is going to be the cask strength bourbon. So you went from basically a used barrel, so not a brand new barrel, to brand new barrels.
All so this is going to be high alcohol.
It's definitely high alcohol.
Yep. High alcohol, high spiciness then too.
This guy's going to be a little spicier, a little bit bolder than the
So one question I get a lot is what is the difference between whiskey and bourbon? And I explained it yesterday, you know, like the same way like all squares are rectangles, but not all rectangles are squares. All bourbon is whiskey, but not all whiskey is bourbon.
Correct. Whiskey is the big category. And whiskey, literally, I mean, it's spirit made from grain. Mm-hmm. And that's what whiskey is. Now, you can have vodka, and that has to do with distillation, distillation proofs and stuff that you're coming off stills with. But generally, if you're not making vodka or gin, any spirit made with grain is going to become whiskey.
Okay.
And so,
because this label says whiskey, and then this one says bourbon. Thank
you. That's correct.
Oh, good eye.
So bourbon is the official spirit of the United States of America.
And again, America.
Go America. USA.
I pledge allegiance to the whiskey.
Exactly.
The United States of America.
Although, ironically, it was not the first whiskey made in the United States. Actually, rye whiskey was really way popular way before bourbon.
That is so hipster of you, Teeny. I liked it before it was historic.
You're George Washington historic. So,
we go way back.
Yeah.
One of the funny stories, historical footnotes I always like was that.
Yes, lay it on me. I love history.
You've heard of the Whiskey Rebellion when basically that was the first time excise tax got charged in the U.S. and the distillers went crazy and they were all up in the Appalachian Mountains. So George Washington, only sitting president to ride off into battle, put down the rebellion. And basically shut down most of the whiskey distilleries in the United States, which left one large distillery, and that happened to be George Washington's distillery.
Monarchy of him.
Yeah.
So at one point, George Washington was the largest producer of whiskey in the United States. So, yeah.
That's hilarious. Anyway, back to what makes bourbon.
So what makes bourbon bourbon? So bourbon has to be made in the United States. You know, a lot of people like to say it has to be made in Bourbon County, Kentucky. Mm. Ironically, there's one distillery in Bourbon County, and it's 3 years old, so none of the major Kentucky brands are even in Bourbon County.
Oh, that's so funny.
So, but most bourbon is made in Kentucky, but bourbon is actually right now made in all 50 states, and technically, again, with the law nerds that I hang out with, technically it looks like Puerto Rico could also make bourbon. It's the only other place that can make bourbon, because it is consider within the rules within the United States.
Interesting.
So. I love loopholes and Puerto Rico.
Loopholes. So they could make rum and bourbon if they wanted to.
That's awesome.
Wow.
But what makes bourbon bourbon?
What makes bourbon bourbon? So it is going to be aged in brand new charred oak containers. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be American oak. It can be any species of oak.
That was my very
next question.
But it has
to be a fresh tree.
Yeah, it has to be it has never aged spirit in there or anything else in that barrel or container before. So
not very green, but that's the American way.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask your opinion on this actually is, do you think they created that law just to create a standardized level of quality within what we're calling bourbon? Or do you think it was the lumber lobbyists that really saw an opportunity there to step in and
That would be more of a Fred Minnick question. he's actually gone into it. I mean, my understanding is that there's a lot of reasons. One was flavor profile-wise.
Right.
If you've used a barrel
really
three, four
it
times, it's not going to contribute the color or the flavor that you are going to be in a brand new barrel. Mm-hmm. Also, our friends over in Scotland would be very angry with us, or Ireland or Japan, because they use old bourbon barrels is what they use to age majority of their products.
Yeah, I was a majority of, sorry, not Tullamore Dew, but the other really big one.
Jameson?
Yeah.
Middleton Distillery.
Yeah, and they are using majority of their barrels are from Jim Beam.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was very interesting.
That is interesting.
Which also makes me think why, as I fell into the whiskey rabbit hole, that Irish whiskey was what I 100% started with, because I think it's just a lot more approachable and mellow because they're using those older woods.
It's the best. To me, it's the most approachable of the whiskeys.
Totally,
It's really easy to get into Irish whiskey. Again, one of my first favorite whiskeys that I really started loving was an Irish whiskey.
Mm-hmm. What was that? What was your favorite?
So the first whiskey that made me like go, oh my God, I like whiskey. Like, I've been drinking Jameson for years,
sure,
obviously.
Yeah.
But the Middleton Rare, which is the same as distillery that makes, they also make a Middleton Berry Crockett, which is absolutely amazing. But they're a little bit mellow because they use malted barley and unmalted barley. Mm-hmm. And it's just a really mellow, really approachable, easy to get into whiskeys. Mm-hmm. But also they have a complexity. Again, Redbreast, if you haven't tried Redbreast yet, it's amazing.
This is my go-to fave here. Every time we go, do you have Irish whiskey? We have Jameson. Never mind. No.
Redbreast is my jam. Yes. I absolutely love Redbreast.
I wonder if, who did you say uses the Jim Beam barrels?
I think it was Jameson, although I believe we were told that at the Tullamore factory, but we were also tasting a lot of whiskey, so don't quote me on
that. I wonder if they're under the Beam Suntory umbrella, because, Beam Suntory owns so much. It would make sense if they were, reusing their own barrels for their other products.
Oh, God, wouldn't it?
I don't remember. I know the Irish, they might be under their own category. I don't know if Diageo's over the top, but I know that it gets kind of convoluted, and people have switched back and forth all the time, but you'll see Jim Beam barrels up at Lefroy in Scotland, mm-hmm, because it's under the Suntory, same group.
Well, this is something that we're sort of, we would be remiss not to mention. Suntory is a Japanese whiskey, mm-hmm, and Japanese whiskey is completely different than any other whiskey. What is your take on?
So the Japanese, the father of Japanese whiskey. He went over to Scotland.
It's Nika, right?
No, his name's Suntory, isn't it?
Oh, is it Suntory?
I don't remember his name. Yeah. I'm trying to remember, but I can't remember. But Nika and they're all kind of around the same time, but they went over and studied in Scotland, basically copied the model from Scotland of how they produce, the way they produce. But when they took it back to Japan, the precision and the way they approach things is so different. Mm-hmm. It's very focused, and it just creates really amazing products that are different than what's being produced in Scotland, even though they're using the same methodology and same, again, still production and everything else.
Again, they're using it, which is, paramount to beer and wine, and really any sort of beverage production is water. They've got the different water. They're in the
even
different
with
climate.
Pizza and food we've talked about. There's a pizza place in Dallas that trucks in water from New York to make their crust.
What?
So,
yes. Who? I need to meet this place.
I need to meet
the pizza.
Whenever we post this, I'll add a footnote.
On the whiskey end, water's really important for fermentation. That's why the Kentucky guys, when they talk about their limestone water, what they're talking about is what they use on the fermentation, because that harder water, the limestone water, has a lot of nutrient that's really great for the yeast. Mm-hmm. But it's not actually used after it's distilled. What's used after distillation is only RO water, because what they're trying to do is not impact the spirit. Now, some of the French, especially the artistic cognac or Armagnac distillers, they actually use rainwater. Is what they'll do, and it really has really lively. If you could use rainwater, but unfortunately, in the United States, I wouldn't use rainwater. If you see a distiller using rainwater to water down, if they're not turning it to RO water, do not drink it, because it's more than likely got a lot of acid. You do not want to drink any distillery that's using pure rainwater in the United States.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense to me, because water is paramount to beer. Brewers will change the composition of their water for specific styles. So if they're making a Pilsner, for example, they will change the water composition to mimic Germany or Czechoslovakia.
Oh, that's so
or the
cool.
Czech Republic, excuse me. Because that's where, that's where the style originated, and that's what they're trying to emulate.
That's really cool.
So, that makes sense to me.
And so that's for us, we actually will add nutrient to the water to make sure that it's got, especially 100% corn spirit, we have to actually add other nutrient to the water so the yeast can actually perform the way it's supposed to. And so that's, again, the hardness and the different, again, calcium and some of the different things that you're looking for in the water. Again, but on the back end, if you were to add limestone water to a finished whiskey, it actually would turn it cloudy.
Ooh.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You don't want that. It doesn't necessarily change the flavor a lot. I mean,
no,
it will a little bit.
It's a big turnoff for people.
But if you look at the whiskey and it's in the bottle and it's cloudy, you're not going to want to drink
it. Well, and as we're going to talk about, or as we have talked about on our previous episode, quality is determined by a number of factors, and in beer, the appearance, and for whiskey as well, and wine. Appearance is part of the quality aspect, which I learned when I tried to homebrew an IPA and did not have any experience in doing that.
It's very delicious and sedimenty.
so much sediment.
Also, the
so much sediment.
Same thing about champagne too. Champagne didn't like bam come into its like champagne rights, and so they figured out how to declaw
it. Off that pot. Yeah. Yeah,
we gave a big old nod to Madame Lady Vouve. Yeah, I love those widows.
All right, have we talked about the tasting notes yet? Or are we just like going down the well?
We're just going down the well. We jumped down the.
Yeah. Do you need a little more to talk about the tasters?
Yeah. I mean, I think we'll need a little bit more for that.
Shout out to what is the studio called?
A Jack and Dorothy.
Shout out to Jack and Dorothy Studios for having us and letting us drink on premise.
Thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We'll keep you nice, and filled.
Yeah.
All right. So tell us what we're tasting here in this strong and spicy glass.
So this guy, Harbinger, straight from the barrel. It's going to be our whiskey that really focuses on our purple corn whiskeys, which is we really love, but in the bourbon area. So this guy's going to be brand new barrels. It's about 50% European oak, 50% American oak.
Oh, interesting.
And then it's got purple corn. It's got a little bit of Bloody Butcher, a little bit of wheat. So it's going to be a little bit mellow, a little bit sweeter, a little bit fruitier of a blend. So rather than where this guy, to me, I get a lot more maple notes, a lot more of that type of stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of more baking spices are really going to start coming through in this guy versus like Promethean or some of the others. So I get a lot more cinnamon. Cloves, a big note I get a lot.
Totally. Yeah, same.
Mm-hmm. I hear that maple. I actually was thinking it reminded me so much of like sleeping in on a Sunday morning, like in a big down comforter, and I couldn't put my finger on why. That's because you're smelling pancakes in the kitchen.
Exactly.
Naked.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, sommelier.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, that's so lovely. And honestly, I love this purple corn cornbread.
And the sweetness in it.
It's so sweet.
It just comes out. And again, those exact same recipes, the corn's the only difference between the two.
Wow, that's really? Awesome. Mm-hmm. That's nuts.
I think that's a great example of how the corn can be different, not only in whiskey, but any way you taste it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting. I love baking, so I love, like, my favorite thing to do is take a recipe and change, like, one or two ingredients in it and do, like, side-by-side comparisons of it.
See what you get. And that's, again, this started us, kind of my brother and myself down the well, was cooking and then getting into wine. Mm-hmm. And from wine, we got into spirits, which is kind of different. A lot of the American distillers are coming from a beer background rather than a wine background, which is where my brother and I kind of come from, that kind of we cut our teeth more on that than we did. And not that I didn't drink beer. But, and again, you'll see that, too, in the personality of spirits. The distillers that were beer makers before, it's really, to me, evident in the spirit that they're making. The way that they ferment, the way that they approach it is very much from the beer way of looking at things rather than from a winemaker's perspective.
I would love to compare and contrast. Yeah. I had never even thought about that
before. Well, I think that's definitely what makes them so unique and so interesting in what they're doing and the techniques that you're using.
Yep. Sure. Says the wine drinker.
I know. That's why I really love you. I love it.
Well, thank you so much again for coming. This was an absolute pleasure.
It was such a treat. Cheers, guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm out.
Well, thank you again for coming out, and thank you, listeners, for listening to Grapes and Grain Podcast. Hope you'll stick with us as we explore the colorful, delicious, and vastly wide, diverse world of alcoholic libations. Thanks.
Thank you, guys. You guys. And I'm out. It's time for a break.
It is
thanks.
Time for a break.
Hey, Laura, what are you getting into this weekend? Any fun plans?
Well, I'm going to head out to Iron Root Republic Distillery.
That's cool. What's happening out there?
Well, you know they do distillery tours every Saturday at 1, but since this Saturday is the first of the month, they're going to be open from 2 to 8:30 p.m., making cocktails all day. So, you know, I'm going to spend the whole day out there.
Oh, that's cool. Do they do that the first Saturday of every month?
Hell yeah, they do.
Sweet. Well, I know they're known for their whiskey. Is that what you'll be drinking?
Oh, man, they do so much more. They're going to have an epic Bloody Mary bar featuring their vodka, and they'll be making handcrafted cocktails with their delicious gin. Plus, they have live entertainment. And did you know the two brothers who own and operate it are out there shaking cocktails in person?
Shake it till you make it. Where are they located?
It's right around the corner in Denison, Texas. But if y'all can't wait till Saturday, you can find a bottle of Iron Root Republic whiskey at a Specs near you.
Thanks for listening to Grapes and Grain Podcast. If you'd like to be featured in our future listener mail segment, please email any questions, comments, or anecdotes to grapesandgrain@gmail.com. That's grapes, the letter N, grain@gmail.com.
Absolutely. We love to hear from listeners and share fun stories and answer any random questions we get. You can also follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Find us on Instagram at Grapes and Grain Podcasts, underscore between each word, and just search for Grapes and Grain Podcasts on Facebook.
Remember, that's grapes, plural, grain, singular. You can also find us online at grapesandgrainpodcast.wordpress.com to see blog posts that go more in-depth to each episode. You can also download or stream our podcast there and find lots of other content about beer and wine.
And of course, find us on patreon.com/grapesandgrain if you'd like to pledge a monthly contribution. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast today.
Cheers!
What you drinking?